That's what I was thinking of, is it actually bypasses them too.
Hopefully I'll stay north of us.
Okay, in a moment I'll give folks a chance to say something about any dreams that happened last night. My expectation is that there might have been some. So that was my expectation, and I'm guessing that's the case. I want to go back, though, to yesterday, last night, in our evening session, and the hero's journey here, and the dream number 8 that Jerry had, right? Okay, so the we called it dream number 8, but it wasn't dream number 8 in our list. It's dream number 7 in our list, right? We assigned it revelation.
In my dream, it was dream number 8.
Yeah, the title of your dream I gave dream number 8 is called, because you selected this dream, right? So, and it's very interesting, the dream that Jerry had, because she goes into a dream library, and that's sort of like a divination technique. A library has many resources, so the I Ching has many possibilities, 64 possibilities, 64 resources, if you want to put it like that. So when you go to the I Ching, you're going to a source that is outside of the subjective ego. And in a sense, we would say you're going to an objective source. Mm-hmm. You're asking something else to comment. And you're seeking this from the unknown. And it's not going to be a sort of cognitive, analytical answer. It's going to be a synchronistic answer. It's going to be an unconscious thing. It's going to be something is going to make a comment here. And so that's what a dream is, right? A dream is a comment out from outside of the ego. And so Jung certainly saw it as having purpose, that a dream was given to you for a reason, and it was trying to make you aware of something that you didn't necessarily know or you didn't know. So that's why I went to the I Ching for number 8, okay, is it seems like, well, that's the library to go to, and we've been studying Chinese wisdom a little bit. That's what Jung was studying, and we've got Richard Wilhelm doing a commentary on the I Ching. Yeah, it seemed like the place to go. So that's what we did, and this is what we got. This is what I read last night. Number 8 is pi, which is water over earth. Just like we're hearing the thunder outside, we've got the water over the earth right now. Feel it. I mean, it's the universe is commenting even as we speak. And we hear it giving us this information here. The translation I read from my iPhone titles it Holding Together, and the translation Lynn brought over, I didn't even look at it, but what was the title of it? Something like Union?
Yeah.
There's a core.
A core, yeah. Okay. So, this is seeking union with others and with the sage. Okay, so of course the others is us and the sage is Jung. We've been exploring Jung as a sage, a possible sage for us to turn to. So this is the revelation, if you want to put it that way, what we received through Jerry's dream. A dream that at first was seemed to be, she was told, well, you picked the wrong dream, or something like that. You she's not the right dream, but then she goes ahead and dreams it anyway, and then she forgets it, and then we explore, you know, this is maybe what's happening here. So this has been a time of creating union with others, with each other. And we're doing that in order to complement and assist each other. You have certainly done that to me, for me, complimented me, assisted me. Sherry?
I had a really short dream this morning that may have been the first part of dream number.
Okay. Well, why do you think it was the first part of dream number?
Because it's working together and pulling together.
Okay. You want to tell us?
It's a very short one, but I think this field, a part of it, huge part of it, was plowed up. And it was obviously plowed when it was wet and then dry. There are huge, hard clods all through it. And we all get together, each of us has a hoe, and we go in there and break up all those clods and get the field completely ready for planting.
That's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Tractor would have been easier.
Well, that's what made the big clods, though.
And was it this field in particular, or was it the field?
It was here.
Okay, good. That's great. That's, yeah. So that resonates with this. It's the earth. We've got the water above the earth. We've got getting ready. Part of our work here is retreat to get ready to do the work. We come together and to such an extent that our unconscious is talking to each other. All right, so and our dreams are sort of mixing together. We've opened ourselves to each other. And so, in the same way, the rain is going to complement the earth, right? So we, in union together, complement each other. Now, the text I read said there are three requirements here that we need to think about in this revelation. So we've been given. So the first is that we hold together with our inner truths. So we hold together with our inner truths. This means that we adhere to proper principle as a matter of habit. So, theoria and praxis. We adhere to proper principle as a matter of habit. Do that. Both are necessary, principle and habit. And so we've worked at it this week with, you know, turning to text, working hard with that, and yet having reflection, worship, meditation, silence, working together. Second is to resist inferior emotions. So we go through a week, we get irritated with Hume, with Burleson, with our neighbor, with roommate, with our house. This isn't working. Wish he'd cook this and not that. Or, you know, we get these inferior emotions, right? But we resist inferior, so we have to fight. We never end, that never ends, this steadfast resistance of these negative emotions. It's what the text says that we need to think about and to do. So with any union, there's always friction. Whenever you have a group, there's friction. There are folks that, you know, you're really attracted to, and there are folks that, well, you're learning to like them, right? So and you keep working on it, right? And so we hold our emotions in balance. We don't give in here. So we're checking anger, you know, we're checking fear. We're not just letting it all hang out. We're not just doing that. We're checking jealousy. Or whatever these negative emotions are, we're trying to check those. The third thing he says is hospitality. It says in a group, make sure everybody in the group enjoys the union. You know, make sure everybody has a place, everybody's included, and make this family available and open. So, you know, what's fascinating is that everybody in this group is very porous person. We're open to things coming in, you know, we're sort of leaky, right? Leaking into each other, okay? And that's great because it means we welcome, you know, this. So I think that's brilliant that the I Ching has given us this revelation here. And it certainly resonates with, you know, the dream that you received last night, which may, for some reason, in your impression, be the beginning of that dream that we're plowing the field, plowing the earth. So the bottom of the hexagram is the earth. It's fecund, it's open. The water is above the earth, and it's, it's coming. We know it's coming. Big storms right here. It's on us, right? Okay. So now, we have one dream that came. Now, before you raise your hand and say, you know how in first grade, raise my hand and tell my dream. And I want to give anybody who has not had a chance to tell a dream, a chance to do that first. That's sort of the first rule. I'm a J, so I always give rules. So if you haven't had a dream and you had a dream last night and you want to share that dream, then you get first go at it. And then the second thing is that we're not going to interpret the dream or put it on. You know, we're not going to put it on this right now. And that doesn't mean it. We might not do that later, like next week when we come back here.
This is a permanent commune, permanent place. Yeah. I thought we just moved here.
Yeah. So next Saturday night we'll work on it. But we're not going to put it on there, and we're not going to take it like it's a piece of meat and chop it up and try to digest it all at once. We want to let it sit, and we want to let it have its own life, and let it speak, let it sit out there. So it's really just the revealing of the dream, telling of the dream. That's the most important thing. But it's possible that it sort of fits. It's very likely that it probably fits in here in some way. So we've had that dream. So anyone who hasn't shared a dream would like to do that. And we'll just take that. As our practice has been, just take a couple of dreams here.
Dinner's ready. I hear my wife calling. Jamie's calling me. And so I'm passing through a room. I pass the window. And in that instance, I see a man walking the sidewalk towards our house. And he's like a moonbeam, like I saw in the forest. One of the trees had been lifted. by moving. We look like a tall man. So I come in, and she's still setting up the plates and things. And we get the front door open and close. And I ask, is that the door? And we both jump up like, ah, so we've been invaded. And that's it.
Okay.
As I woke up, I realized that before going to bed, I had, as you suggested, invited this in and was to accept it with the good and the bad of it. So in meditation, I invited it in, and he came in the dream. Okay. So as I woke up, I was like, oh, yeah, I think I reacted like that second one.
No interpretation.
I need to resist the inferior emotion.
No.
Sorry, I've stepped over my bound.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's okay. It's not that that's interpretation wrong, and not that you shouldn't do it, but you've given it to the group, and we're gonna sort of sit with it. Okay, another dream.
Yeah, Karen.
Sure.
Okay.
Two characters, Brandy and me.
Two characters for sure.
No interpretation.
That was very objective.
Brandy comes into the kitchen and says there are two big snakes on this wooden pathway. So I am going to kill them. So I walk out and a small branch has fallen down onto the walkway. And I look. And there's one snake like this that's reddish along this little thin twig-like thing. And then there's a brown-black snake over here about this long. And I looked and I thought, oh, they're too small. I'm not going to kill them. And that was it.
It's a good thing that dream wasn't on Tuesday night.
I've had
little tinges of a version of a dream that I had some time ago that Dave mentioned asking dreams to come. And Lynn had said that, I heard several years ago. And so I went to bed one night praying for guidance. I was agitated and felt like I needed guidance, and I was hoping it would come in a dream. And the dream I had was this mature woman, beautiful, what you know people would call a handsome woman, not a 22-year-old beautiful, but a beautiful middle-aged woman. And we were kissing passionately. And I woke up and I thought, oh, I was asking for wisdom, and I just get a sex dream. And then I realized that's Sophia.
Oh.
And I've had similar tinges of that here, but not my dream. I haven't had one that vivid.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. That's enough. That's good. That's perfect. Excellent, and we will remember these, right? Once you put them, once the image becomes a story, it's remembered. Well, we started the initial dream was took our shoes off, and we were on holy ground. We although we weren't sure we should put our shoes back on, but we took off things. We took off our persona. And finally, we really got comfortable, and union occurred, right? Union certainly has been a part of this. Now, we're about to take a break, but before we do, it's early, right? I know. Throwing you off a little bit. Before we do, I want to introduce you to what we're going to be looking at here over in Lynn's. The question for the day is, if I'm a bridge pillar, to which of my communities does the wisdom of the East flow? So if I'm a bridge pillar, to which of my communities does the wisdom of the East flow? That's kind of our...
See, two?
Yeah, if I'm a bridge pillar, to which of the communities I'm involved in does the wisdom of the East flow? And as of course, yesterday we started looking at doctrine as a portal. Been thinking about art as a portal to get into a religious phenomenon, and we're thinking about doctrine, and we mentioned that for Christians and post-Christians, that's the elephant in the room. We've talked about the fact that many folks have left the church over doctrine, no longer cohere. And so it'll be very poignant, our discussion yesterday, as we look at this film. You're going to say, wow, okay, that's really on target here to bring out the tensions that we feel. So we're going to see a dialogue which represents the exchange of letters between Carl Jung and Victor White. And in 2007, there was this was published. The letters that were exchanged over about a 15-year period between Victor White and Carl Jung. It's called the Jung White Letters. I brought a copy that I've checked out. I don't think I brought it in here. It's about a $50 volume, so I haven't bought it to make for it to go down. It's been out a while, but I've read it a couple times. By Lammers and Cunningham. They're the editors, Lammers and Cunningham. The Jung White Letters. It's 127 letters.
Goodness.
That they exchange. And the first letter comes in 1945, right at the end of the war. And these two men are caught up in a mission to transform the spiritual life of the West. And they are inspired by this enormous vision. They see themselves as instruments, and in a way we do too, right? We see ourselves as instruments, and we're not trying to be prideful in saying that.
In some ways, is he the priest?
Mm-hmm. Okay. He's a priest. He's a monk. And it's sort of been thrust upon us. It's not that we're great or something like that. It's just that it seems to be what we've been asked to do. And Jung, in his public writings, is very circumspect about his theological intuitions. Remember, he thinks of himself as a scientist. And, for the reason that he's now rejected as a scientist, he was right that to put everything out there he thought was going to cause problems. But with White, he puts it all out. These are private letters to White. And he's very candid here. So White is a Catholic priest. He's a monk. These are very personal letters that they exchange. They start with mutual affection for each other, great respect. It will end 15 years later with accusations of betrayal and misrepresentation. So Jung, he's 70 when this dialogue starts, and he's looked all of his life for somebody like Victor White that understood him and that could help him with Christian dogma. And White is a teacher, and he's especially interested in Thomas Aquinas, but he's, of course, someone who can teach Jung about Christian dogma. He's also somebody that's read Jung, who has been in Jungian analysis and really, you know, is into Jung scholarship. So Jung finds a friend, and he's a true friend, and Jung, you know, really sees him as sort of a soulmate in that sense. White's about, I think, about 20 years younger than Jung. And Jung will become a mentor and really a spiritual director for White as White goes through really difficult struggles, professional struggles, spiritual struggles. And then their relationship ruptures. And it ruptures over the question of God and the nature of God. And this reaches ahead when Jung publishes his book, Answer to Job, in 1952. And then there's this rupture that occurs. So you'll see that in the exchange. Now, there is a brief reunion before White dies prematurely, and he dies in 1960. So, any questions before we take a little break, get some coffee or whatever, and then that'll give us a chance to go sit up.
Let me mention, you just used a term that I think as we're figuring out how to express Jung to other people, that I was making a big point the other day that we become vulnerable if we say he's a scientist, because he just follows scientific methodology all the time. But and he claimed to be a scientist because that was where the action was, that was where the credibility was. You just used the term scholar, which to me is a very powerful term. And it differentiates a scholar from somebody who just, you know, sort of thought something up on their own. It means that they've worked hard, they've done their homework, they have analyzed and so forth. But I think in scholarship, you can use a lot of different methods. You can use science. You can use intuition. You can use perennial philosophy. You can bring in a lot of different things, which he did, and which to me give more credibility than to say, well, I'm a scientist, because science is, I mean, if you really do science, it's very limited in what it can deal with. And so I would be comfortable in saying Jung was a tremendous scholar.
Yeah, that's helpful, yeah. And it again points to the difficulties of the cross-disciplinary work that we sometimes do. I often think of Bader, we really don't have a university, we have a multiversity.
We
often talk to each other from the sciences and the humanities, even religion and history, or religion and English, you know, sometimes even there you have the methodological problem that we face. And of course the humanities, we feel a little inferior because we're not
scientific.
So, anything else?
It strikes me, I have seen the question of love and breakup. I have always been sort of worried that you may say something and another person will stop loving you because you said something that they don't agree with. And I always thought that perhaps love was more powerful than an idea, because love is like like an essential emotion, like life. And when I hear people who, over a question of the definition of God, you let go of this friendship, it sort of breaks my heart. And every time I hear about people who break up a love affair because of an idea, I thought that love was much more powerful than an idea. It's sort of life.
Yeah.
And so that was my.
You're going to see the pain mm-hmm. here in the film. I mean, you'll see that the pain is evident in the letters. Struggle, the feeling of betrayal that happens would be really evident. Okay, so let's see. So by 10 after 10, we'll try to get that thing started. That'll give us 15 minutes to take a little break, and then we can get set up over there. So.
I'll model it for you.
Yeah.
It's not big. It's not big enough for me. It really isn't. You know, mm-hmm. Shall I?
Yeah, just set it to your own.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to try it on. Sorry.
Will it fit Emily?
It probably would.
Then she could have a match.
But that's not her color. She wouldn't wear it.
Really, it would be pretty on her, though, I think.
I've given up buying things for Emily.
Yeah. You know, you gotta know when to cut your losses.
And then
you know?
She never wears them.
Hey, Gary, should we shut these windows at least?
I think you're...
That's the way.
Oh, we've got it closer.
Wise.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If we get a chunk floater, then...
I think it's going to miss us.
Is it? We won't be back in here this afternoon.
Unless it drops further south. Because we're like right there, right?
Well, there's Paris.
Yeah, I know, but...
We're over here.
We're
right in the yellow.
No, because here's the Red River here.
Oh.
So we're like...
I can't see very well with these glasses. Can you put it in motion?
Yeah, it's going east.
Yeah, I think.
Looks like it's
going to
go just north.
I think it's going to be just northwest mostly. We might get some. And they're predicting it's not supposed to be bad here. National Weather Service just slipped. Maybe some rain.
Well, that's all
good.
There we go.
There's a telephone. Yeah,
we're up here.
Is it in motion there?
Let's see. Jim looked at it. It was.
East, move it east to west.
Totally east at that point.
Well, I wouldn't mind if we get a little at home, but
I don't
lower
like
the windows a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not really right on.
Here's
us. We're just at
see,
the edge of it, right?
We're on the west side of it now.
It's passing kind of north,
north
of us.
North and east, uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Are we coming back in here? Don't know.
We're going to go to Lynn's watch a video this morning.
He didn't say whether we would be back here afterwards.
Let's leave some stuff.
used to their new system.